Good evening, everyone. This is Congressman Joe Crowley, and I want to thank you all for taking the time to participate this evening in our Teletown Hall. I'm calling to get your thoughts, your answers, your questions on efforts to revitalize our economy. Please press star 3 now if you would like to ask a question of me or make a comment. But before I start taking questions, I would like to provide you with a quick update on my efforts to get our economy back on track. Last February, many of you may recall, I hosted a Teletown Hall on the issue of our economy. I'm pleased to say that since then, Congress has taken further action, and I believe that things are starting to improve. Congress has enacted 3 significant measures: the Economic Stimulus Act, the HIRE Act, and the Small Business legislation to help revitalize our economy. The stimulus law invested $6 billion into New York City, helping to save and create over 23,000 full-time jobs. The HIRE Act provided tax incentives for businesses to hire workers. It also expanded funding for infrastructure bond programs to get construction workers back on the job. In New York, these kinds of bonds are used by the city and state to support long-term and large projects like the renovations at Willets Point. Remember, to ask a question, you need to press star 3 and then ask the question. Star 3 and then ask the question. And the Small Businesses Bill extended the life of 2 of the Small Business Administration's most successful loan guarantee programs, the 7A Loan Guarantee Program and the 504 Loan Program. Together, these bills have helped to ignite hiring again throughout our country. For example, last month, 162,000 people, new jobs and people were created. Not new people, new jobs that people filled were created. That's an improvement compared to the day that President Obama took office, when our country was losing 700,000 jobs a month. I appreciate, however, that this is just a start, and fixing our economy is an enormous task. I wish there was a silver bullet that could fix the situation overnight, but there simply isn't. The good news is America is home to the best, the brightest, and the hardest working. And I know we will get through this very difficult time. I hope this information is helpful this evening, but tonight is first and foremost about hearing from you. I'm guessing that aside from questions about the economy, many of you have questions about the newly enacted health insurance reform measure as well. Hopefully I can answer any questions you have, and if I can't, I will put you in touch with my staff. So again, if you'd like to ask me a question or make a comment, press star 3 and a member of my staff will assist you shortly. As we queue up the first number of calls, I also want to take this opportunity to encourage you to visit my website, crowley.house.gov. And there you can sign up for my e-newsletters, email me your thoughts, and get updated information about my efforts on behalf of our community in Congress. And I sincerely do hope that all of you find this new twist on an old medium, telephone communication, to communicate and bring your Congress closer to you. And again, if you have a question, please dial star 3 or press star 3, and I'll be happy to answer your question. First on is Ken from Throgs Neck. Ken, you are live.
Good evening. Hello, Congressman. Ken. Thanks for holding this teleconference.
Thank you. Ken, are you there? Ken, I lost you. Hello, Ken? Ken, are you there? Ken, if you dial in, we'll get you back on. I must have inadvertently hit the wrong number. We'll get there. Okay. James Scaragnella. James Scaragnella from the Bronx, you are on. Hello,
yes,
James.
Yes, Congressman. I listened to your job creation numbers, and I appreciate you hosting this teleconference, but I don't see these numbers anywhere being created. I'm just curious as to where these numbers are coming from.
Well, the numbers are coming from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, And how I derived is by a formula that I personally can't say that I'm familiar with. They're taking in those statistics, and they what it really is you have a lot of people who have been out of work for some time now, and they no longer count those folks. As they create new jobs, more people come back into the market looking for a job. And because of that, you may not see the number dip below 10%, but the important point is that they're indicating that there certainly is an uptick in the economy in comparison to what happened just a year ago, where we saw 700,000 jobs being lost in the month by the same bureau, is now saying that we actually are creating an additional 160,000 jobs. So besides creating or retaining over 23,000 jobs just in New York City last year, because you have to remember, the money that was delivered through the jobs and stimulus package was money to the state and local government to help keep firefighters, police officers, and teachers who otherwise would have been fired or lost their job, kept them going and in place. So I hope that that answers your question, James. And we're going to now go to Jardine Doreen from East Elmhurst. Jardine, you're on the air. Hello, Jardine?
But that doesn't answer my question. I'm asking if I can get a job as an investigator.
You want to know if you can get a job as an investigator?
Yeah,
I'm
good.
Well, I'm sure you are good. I'm not at the point myself hiring investigators. My office doesn't have them. But what we'd be happy to do is if you stay on the line, my staff can take information about your resume or your credentials, and we can help put you in touch with friends that we have in the law enforcement field, and maybe they can use your expertise. So thank you, Jardine. Please stay on the line, and we'll try to help you out. We're going to go to another caller here. James Anderson from Co-op City. James? Hello, James? Hello, James?
Yes.
Yes, hello. You're on the air. Go ahead, James.
I was asking a question. I'd noticed in New York City while people were losing work, a lot of people were working up here in Co-op City. And the problem that I was wondering about, people losing work and the people working up here in Co-op City did not speak English.
Uh-huh.
And why is that? Or is that the problem that's going on? You fire people that speak English and hire people seemingly that might not be legal.
Well, that certainly could happen. And we do know that one of the problems we're facing in the overall issue of immigration reform is the fact that many employers are hiring employees that are undocumented. And to undermine, in many respects, the laws that we have in place here in terms of protecting workers, especially union workers. And so that's why I believe we need to have holistic reform of our immigration system. The system is definitely broken, both at the border, but also institutionally. We have a backlog of people who are looking to become American citizens that have been waiting for years, who have been doing that the responsible and the right way. And so I do think there is that issue. And so I don't want to overstate that at the same time, but you're right. I think that there are some individuals who are taking jobs that Americans would take, and that's why I think we have to have a more holistic approach towards the overall issue of immigration. So I hope that answers your question, and we're going to go to Dove again from Co-op City. Dove, you are live.
Good afternoon, Congressman Crowley. My name is Faith Dove, and I'm Co-op City Section 5. Calling to ask you strongly, I'm a job developer. That's my profession. And you gave a great job job fair in Castle Hill, I think it was 2006.
Yeah.
And I would like to ask you, would you please try to do another one?
I would love to do that. In fact, you should know that I've been talking to my office. We did hold a jobs fair earlier this year in conjunction with Monster.com up in the Bronx at the Metro Plaza Center. It was a very well-attended event. But I do think that the one that we held a couple of years ago over in the Castle Hill Soundview area with Soundview Community in Action was a great, great event because I think people actually walked out of there. Many people walked out with jobs. So, Faith, what we'll do is if you stay on the line and continue to talk to someone from my office, we'd love to work with you on that as well and have your participation. But it's my intention to do one back in Soundview as well. So we'll look forward to working with you on that. So thank you very much. The next call is coming from Jim Higgins from Woodside. Jim, you're on the line.
Well, hi, Congressman. Thank you for your St. Patrick's Day party in Sidetracks. I enjoyed it.
Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks for being there.
I'm on Medicare and I have a HMO. What happens when they start cuts in Medicare? Would I lose the HMO? Or because a lot of my friends have HMOs also.
No, you will not lose any benefits, and you will not see any diminishment in the service at all. In fact, Congress included in provisions to strengthen Medicare in this bill that passed. So right now, when you go for a wellness visit or a checkup, you have to make a co-payment. That's all changed. From now on, there's no co-payment for a wellness visit or a checkup. So that's one advantage. I think the other is going to be that we're going to eliminate the donut hole. So if you're on medications, if you're taking a lot of medications, right now there is a limitation as to how much the government will actually help you. So what we're doing is we're going to close that, and across the board eventually the government through Medicare will pay 75% for the cost of prescription drugs, and Medicare recipients will pay 25% across the board. There will no longer be a cutoff or an end to that. So this really is an advancement for Medicare. I think it's important to remember that the Democratic Caucus created Medicare in the first place. We don't want to destroy it. It's our program. We made it. We're very proud of it. And what we're doing is expanding it, but we're also shoring it up and ensuring that the life of Medicare is extended for another decade. And we're going to have to continue to work on this, bringing down the cost of health care overall. But you need to know that there'll be no diminishment whatsoever in your coverage, nor any seniors who are Medicare. No diminishment. Keep your doctors, keep your HMO, keep your insurance as is. If anything, there are enhancements. So thank you for the call. Remember, if you have a question, we ask that you would please dial *3 to ask that question, *3 to ask a question. With that, our next caller is Jeff Offner from the Bronx. Jeff, you are live. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good evening, Congressman. I have a question for you. I'm not sure if you're aware, and you've seen all the advertisements on television for Get Your Free Power Wheelchair from various companies.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen those. Several of those companies have a methodology that they use to have Medicare pay for this by producing fraudulent paperwork to meet Medicare guidelines. Some of them have been sanctioned, fined, convicted of Medicare fraud. However, with CMS's new program from competitive bidding, CMS has awarded these companies contracts. So that's like putting the fox in the hen house.
Yep.
If there's fraud going on now and CMS in their infinite wisdom has gone ahead and awarded contracts to these fraudulent companies,
yep.
How is that fiscal responsibility on the part of CMS? And
yep.
What kind of oversight is there?
There is an enormous amount of waste, fraud, and abuse that goes on in the Medicare system and across the board in healthcare. And that's exactly what we're trying to crack down on. I'm sure you've probably followed this debate very well, and not to get too far into the details, but I worked very closely with my colleagues, particularly what was known as geographic variation. And one of the issues that we were dealing with specifically, why does it cost more for delivery of health care in one part of the country than another part of the country, and et cetera. And one of the issues we really delved into heavily and continue to do is on the issue of waste, fraud, and abuse that goes on. The legislation that we passed, though, I believe strengthens the existing compliance and the enforcement tools for Medicare, and it increases the funding to support the efforts that they've been part of, and also creates new ones. Tougher penalties for companies who try to defraud the Medicare program. Quite frankly, I think people like that should be in jail. They should never be able to have a license again to deal in that. For example, Medicare will have more tools to battle the companies that have set up fake storefronts and charge Medicare for services they never provided. They're criminal, is what they are, and they're going to be hit with stiffer fines, and they're going to get jail time. It's proven that for every dollar we invest in fighting fraud, waste, and abuse, we produce $1.75 in savings. So you're absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the head. This is where the money, much of the money, is being just thrown away, and we need to get on top of that. And quite frankly, you mentioned in particular these wheelchair companies that advertise on television. And, you know, in many respects, those companies have actually hurt legitimate wheelchair company businesses. I have a company in Queens that does God's work. They actually fit people who are quadriplegic or really severely disabled and can't just go up and order on television a device or a wheelchair. And in many respects, they believe they may have been hurt a little bit by this because of these new restrictions put on it. I'm going to work with them to make sure that they're not hurt and that CMS and Medicare understand that they are a legitimate company and they really are doing God's work. I visited their factory in Queens and been able to meet with them and talk to them about it. But these other folks have really damaged the system, I believe, and they've also cost the taxpayers millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. So we're going to make every effort to crack down on that. Let's just see. We've lost Ken, or is okay? So, Ken, we lost Ken, but Ken is back on. Ken, we lost you earlier. Ken, are you there?
Yes. Thanks, Congressman.
Hi, Ken. I'm sorry about that.
The question I have for you on the economy is: the country has an estimated 11 million illegal immigrants in the country. You've always been a supporter of granting an amnesty to the people so that they can stay here and even bring in their spouses and relatives. You supported the Gutierrez bill, and I believe you co-sponsored it back in December.
Yeah.
How is adding an additional 11 million people onto our citizenship rolls and then allowing their relatives to come into the country, how is that going to help us economically and financially?
Well, firstly, let me say that the bill that I supported not only addresses those 10 to 12 million people who are living here illegally or undocumented, because I do think that that is a major and a particularly important but difficult part of this equation to have to deal with. There are other aspects to that bill, one is which I think we first have to start off with, and that is security. I believe that there is a problem with the integrity of our borders, and our nation needs to secure that. There's no question about that. I literally just came back from Arizona this week, and I heard firsthand some of the stories that people are dealing with. There was a rancher who was killed on the U.S.-Mexico border, and they may have been very much involved in some drug trafficking and drug trade. So I do recognize that this is it's not a simple approach, a simple solution. But one of the things that has happened in the past, whenever we have passed a comprehensive reform in the past, or what was called that, is we never really fully address the issue of the integrity of our borders. We need to do that. We also need to address the fact that the immigration system in our country is broken. It is not working. We have a legitimate immigration system that is backlogged years. People who have gone through the process and done the right way have yet to get their citizenship, the bureaucracy and everything else that's involved. So we need to address that issue. But I also think we need to address the issue of the undocumented and the illegals that are here. None of them should be here if they've committed a crime against the country or against another person of this country. And like President Bush before, this is not a Democrat or Republican issue. I think there's been bipartisanship on this, including Senator Lindsey Graham, in the past Senator John McCain. I think trying to find an overall solution to this problem, we do need to deal with those who are here in that fashion and give a pathway towards citizenship. Now, having said that, there have been demonstrations to show that having getting these people out of the black market that they're in right now, paying all their taxes, they do pay some taxes now, but having them pay all of their taxes and contribute to the to the society in many different ways, including doing jury duty, for instance, which they're prohibited from doing right now, that can help in terms of making them fuller contributing citizens to this country. So I do think that there are studies that show that if we actually were to find a way, to a pathway, not to cut in front of other people, by the way, not to cut in front of people that have been doing this legitimately and doing it the right way, but getting in the back of the line, paying a fine, paying a penalty for having broken the law or overstayed a visa. That's the way in which I think we need to move on this. Thank you for your call. The next caller is Doris Cheever from the Bronx. Doris Cheever or Chever, you are live.
Oh, hello, Congressman Collins. My question was, first, are you you're a Democrat, right?
Yes, I am.
Right. Do you believe in bipartisanship in the Congress?
I sure do.
Okay, great. Because I see too much of nonpartisanship, and if it's a Republican, it's only Republicans vote. If it's Democrats, only Democrats vote. And I really think that needs to be amended, because when me and my daughter, who's 11, watches TV, and she's an avid watcher of the news and keeps up with current events, I mean, and she sees this, and she goes, well, why aren't they agreeing with that? Isn't this one country? Aren't we all for the same things? I mean, it's very disturbing.
Yeah, Doris, I don't disagree with you. I think it is disturbing, quite frankly. But I also want to let you know there's a lot more bipartisanship that goes on here than is ever reported by the media back home in particular. But I'll give you a great example. Is I'm working right now with Mary Bono Mack from California on a bill dealing with female genital mutilation. It's not an easy subject to talk about, but it's something that's happening right now to many young women in our country. They're being taken home to their parents' homelands, and this procedure is taking place. And Mary and I are working together to end that procedure, allowing for American citizens to be brought to Africa and elsewhere to have what really is an arcane and I believe a terrible procedure that is done to their bodies. And then they're brought back here because it is illegal to do that here. That's just one example of a bill that I'm working on with Mary Bono. But I've had a consistent record of working across the aisle. That doesn't mean that I agree with everything my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle say. At the same time, I do think that dialogue is important, and give and take and back and forth is important. I do think, though, unfortunately, that many within the Republican Party have determined that on the big issues this year, they're just simply not going to cooperate. They'd rather that all the big bills that are passed that be done by one party, they go to the elections and let the American people decide how they feel the government is operating. I would prefer if there was more cooperation, but that'll happen in the future, I think, as well. So thank you for your a great call, and I think an important call for the people to hear as well. Next, I'd like to go to Roberta Carr. From Jackson Heights, Queens. Roberta Carr,
yes.
You are on the air, Roberta.
I'm live, which is good news tonight. My question, it related to the healthcare legislation, but as I came back after speaking with your screener, I think you were dealing with it to some extent, but I'm not sure. My question is, I followed that whole process rather closely, and although it's far from ideal, I think it does open the door for some, you know, future progress. But I was just wondering what your feedback has been from your constituents, both individuals and small businesses, and how they feel about it, because yep. Part of the problem is, of course, the issues, the facts of it, and there is some of it isn't so great because health insurance companies are going to benefit tremendously, but other people will as well. And, there hasn't really been a lot of proper information put out there. Because, again, as you just said, the media, you know, picks up the ball and runs with it. But what basically has been your feedback, if any, from constituents on the healthcare legislation? And that was one question. And then just briefly, I want to say, I think as long as our jobs continued to go overseas and stay overseas. You can offer all these jobs through the stimulus, which is a good thing, I believe, but the unemployment figures aren't going to drop much because there just aren't that many good jobs, and I personally don't believe these jobs are going to come back. I mean, unless you really, you know, you really have a need to have a career with McDonald's, you know, a lot of the good stuff isn't going to be there. But the main thrust of my question was your feedback from constituents here in the Bronx and Queens on the health care legislation.
No, I appreciate
it. Positive, negative, or whatever.
No, Roberta, thank you for the call. I've heard from all sides on this issue, both before the vote and certainly after the vote as well. And I have to say that overall, most of my constituents are actually happy that we passed the comprehensive reform on health care. There certainly are dissenters, and I don't mean to say that everyone out there is euphoric about this, but I think at the end of the day, what we were able to accomplish was meaningful for many people in their lives, giving an opportunity for people who heretofore have not been able to afford insurance an opportunity to buy it, and also to work on, as a previous caller mentioned, in terms of waste, fraud, and abuse, going after and tackling that issue and bringing down the overall cost of healthcare delivery. It's interesting, the folks that were fighting this the most, which were the insurance agents, insurance companies, are, as you mentioned, the ones who are going to stand to reap the most reward from this, because we actually are increasing by over 23 million people, the number of people that they will now be able to insure. So it's kind of interesting that that's the case. In terms of small businesses, most of the small businesses in my district are less than 50 employees, and with that, they're actually exempt from the small business provisions within this bill, although there are incentives in there for them to still offer and for their employees through the state exchange to receive and get insurance. The ones that are larger than 50 in my district, many of them already do offer insurance and will not really come under the this regime as well, except that there may be some benefits to them for having offered that insurance as well in terms of getting some tax relief from the federal government for that purpose. So overall, I think the response has been good. And I think you're also right. The more that people learn about what was in this bill in the first place and get past the din and the noise that was created by special interests, the more they realize that this is a good bill, a bill that will end discrimination against people who have pre-existing conditions, something I think everyone agrees is good, a bill that will allow for people who are 26 and under to remain on their parents' insurance. I think everyone agrees that that's a good thing. The provision that will outlaw or eventually do away with getting rid of people on insurance rolls because of onset conditions, I think that's a good thing that will also become part of this as it moves on. So I think it is a good bill, and I was happy to support it. I also just want to touch base on the second part of your question, that is on jobs. There are many jobs that have been created right here in our district through the stimulus bill, and I can just go through a couple. In Queens, on 132nd Street and Linden Place, the extension of in College Point. In Long Island City, the Queens Plaza improvements in Phase 1 is all stimulus-related. The College Point houses, roofing and repairs, Woodside houses, roofing and repairs, all stimulus-related. In the Bronx and Eastchester Gardens, Soundview houses and Throgsneck houses, brick work repair and elevator repair that are employing people here in our district. In the Hunts Point, in New York City EDC, $16.2 million that hasn't started yet, that's about to start now up in Hunts Point. And I can go through an entire list here, both in Queens and the Bronx and our district, of real jobs that are being created. So I do appreciate that call. I want to let you know, Roberta, as well, the issue of creating more high-tech jobs. We need to have more high-tech throughout our country, but I'd like to see more of that in Queens County, and I want to work with the mayor's office in driving that. I'd love to see that in the Bronx, and it's something I'm working with the mayor's office as well in particular, about getting those kind of jobs here in New York. I think you're right. Many of the jobs that we once relied upon in our city are not coming back. But the one thing about our country is we're innovative. When we put our minds to it, we can stay ahead of the rest of the world. We've been a very fortunate and blessed country, but it's also come through hard work, and I think that's what we have to do. This is not easy. We're competing with the rest of the world, and we want to keep those good jobs here in the United States. So thank you, Roberta, for that call. Please remember, If you have a question, to please press star 3 in order to have your question queued up. And with that, I'm going to go to the next caller. And forgive me if I don't get this right, but it's Sotirios Benardis. I hope I got that right. Did I get that right?
Sotirios Benardis.
Sotirios Benardis. You're on the line.
Sotirios Benardis. I'm on the line.
Yes, you are.
Yes. Good evening, Congressman. I live in Maspeth, Queens. I've been here 26 years. And I'm wondering why there's not much police presence in Maspeth. I know there's a precinct in Glendale, mm-hmm. but we don't see much police presence on Grand Avenue here. And I know every day when I watch the news, there's a lot of crime going on, and I'm wondering if it's even getting safe to walk at night anymore around.
Well, thank you very much for that call. I'm very familiar with the geographic location of the precincts throughout Queens County, in particular the 104th precinct, which you're talking about, which is situated in Glendale. But that does come down to Maspeth and Grand Avenue. And I thank you for bringing that to our attention. If you believe there is a short there in terms of the coverage, I will bring that to the attention of the commanding officer of the 104th precinct. We do have the 104th precinct cops community program in Maspeth, and it's an organization that if you're not familiar with, I think if you stay on the line, we can help you get information for that. But also, the 104th Precinct Community Council meets as well, and that's an opportunity for people to go down and also express their concern about the lack of police presence. But what I can tell you is that the job stimulus bill that we passed last year provided for funding to New York State, New York City, so that we can keep our police force in check. There were no loss of jobs in the police department or fire department, as mentioned earlier, and the teachers as well, because of that money. Otherwise, there would have been massive layoffs, I believe, throughout the state, but also in the city of New York. From the federal level, we've been doing what we can, and we have to do more, and we'll continue to do more to ensure that there is funding from the federal government to ensure that we have the police presence. I've been working with my colleague Anthony Weiner also about reinvigorating the COPS program that helped provide for 100,000 police officers, new police officers during the Clinton administration. We believe that the federal government needs to help here now as well. It will also help our local and state governments in terms of dealing with the budget shortfalls that they're facing right now. We'll stay on top of this. And as a son and the grandson of a police officer, I appreciate the hard work that those men and women do every day. And I also appreciate the fact that people need to see them, want to see them, and the presence is a deterrent towards petty crime and other criminal activity as well. So thank you for that phone call. And next, we're going to go to Pam. Sorry, Pam, I don't have your last name, from College Point. So, Pam, if you're there, you're on the line.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to know, there's been a lot of outsourcing as far as manufacturing jobs, you know, like clothing. A lot of our clothing comes from other countries. And we're not really, if we could bring that back to this country, you know, manufacturing, right. You know, clothing and whatever. Because if you see Canada takes care of, you know, they do all their manufacturing. Hmm. So if we can bring that back here and start making our own clothing.
Right. Well, thank you, Pam. You know, the exporting of jobs overseas is a real problem. I agree, throughout the United States. I'm happy to report that Congress, I believe, is working to eliminate the tax breaks that incentivizes moving jobs overseas. A major provision was recently enacted into law that will now prevent really wealthy Americans from hiding income offshore in Swiss bank accounts and foreign bank accounts, and that's keeping money here in the United States and ensuring that money is not being spent overseas or being kept overseas, but being really here in the United States, and is also is not escaping U.S. taxes. So to keep that money here is also going to be a source for investment in this country to help keep jobs in this country. Secondly, in the coming weeks, the Congress is expected to send the President a bill that's going to take away tax breaks for the multinational companies that hire workers overseas and then claim a tax benefit here in the United States. That law will eliminate that tax abuse and, again, help to keep those jobs here in the U.S. I continually scour the tax code to ensure that we kill provisions that will allow any multinational corporations to benefit from our tax structure that keep jobs overseas. So I'm also working to make our tax code a fairer one for America's workers and for retirees, and to keep our companies honest and competitive and working here in the U.S. and hiring American workers. And lastly, I'll just say that I'm working very hard to make sure that China, the biggest exporter to the United States, fixes its exchange rate and stops with its fluctuation of its currency. When China purposely keeps its currency at a level that's unfair for American workers, it means that the U.S. products are artificially expensive in China, and Chinese products are artificially cheap here in the United States, which incentivizes more outsourcing to China and incentivizes more purchasing of their products and less purchasing of ours. So we're working very hard to fix these problems, and I won't rest until China makes those changes. So thank you very much for that call, and the next caller is going to be Muriel Hug. Muriel Hug, I don't know where you're from, Muriel, but you're on the air live.
Oh, good evening, Congressman. I just wanted to call to congratulate you on this marvelous way of communicating. The news reports that I get on TV are so inane, I don't know what's happening. And right now, because of your answers to many questions, I'm sort of on data overload. I understand that you're going to download a transcript of what the questions were asked and answers as well on your website, am I correct?
Yes. Yes, you can. You can go to my website tomorrow to listen to this, the overall call again if you wish, and it'll be on www.crowley.house.gov. So you can get that tomorrow. Okay? Okay? Hello? Oh, sorry, I lost you there. Our next, I'm sorry. I'm going to take one more question, but please know that at the end of this call, you'll have an opportunity to leave me a message with your comments, and we'll get back to you. So I can't answer every question at one time, so I'm trying to do as best I can. Our last call of the evening is from Ms. Nancy Lenich from Jackson Heights. Nancy, you're on the line.
Good evening, Congressman. How are you this evening?
Good evening. Very well, thank you, Nancy.
I had a question about Social Security and how they calculate that CPI, because as you well know, we did not get a raise this year. President Obama's little plan of a rebate was nixed by the Republicans. We're not supposed to get a raise next year. And I understand they were going to change the calculation, not use the CPI and just give us a regular raise. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah,
my rent has gone up, my insurance, everything's gone up, but my Social Security.
No question about it. Let me give you a good example here. Firstly, you know, the way the actuaries work and the statistics that go into determining whether people get a raise or not in Social Security leaves a lot to be desired. There's no question about it. The good news is that when you got a raise in the past, even though the actuaries say that we should actually diminish or lower the payments to Social Security, the law prevents that. So whatever increase you've gotten in the past, whether we should have gotten it or not in the past, it's there in law, so they can't diminish it. What really happened was there was a spike in the price of gas a couple of years ago, and that really threw the actuaries way off, and they increased there were major increases to Social Security, although, albeit you wouldn't recognize it. I always use the example that my wife and her family are from Montana, and for the same person who works the same hours in Montana and the person who works in New York, those same hours, in terms of Social Security, they get the exact same check, except it goes a lot further in Montana than it will in New York City. So whenever we don't see an increase in COLA, it really does have a negative impact. What I can say to you, and more to the point, and more to your question is, I know that President Obama wants to give all seniors, all of folks on Social Security, a $250 check this year to make up for the lack of a Social Security COLA. And I'm supportive of that idea as well. I know that our seniors are hurting. They need the COLA increase. We'll address it for this year. We'll deal with next year, but this year first. So our seniors out there, I'm working on the Ways and Means Committee to get a one-time check this year to make up for the lack of that a shortfall. And it's my hope that that passes and passes soon. So thank you again for that question. Unfortunately, that was the last question we have time for tonight, and I've I've really appreciated your taking the time to talk to me about the state of our economy and the work Congress and the President and that I'm doing to make sure we all thrive once again. I appreciate all your questions, and I hope you enjoy tonight's exchange. Finally, I want you to know that while things may seem very tough right now, I believe that we are on the right course. After we emerge from this downturn, I believe we will build a better and a stronger America. Because, like all of you, I want my children to inherit a nation where there are ample employment opportunities for hardworking Americans, a nation where health care is affordable and accessible for all Americans, and a nation where we Americans produce our own clean energy and no longer depend on countries, especially those who mean to do us harm, to meet our energy needs. Thank you all so much for taking the time out of your evening to participate in this discussion. Also, please know that at the end of this call, you will have an opportunity to leave a message with your thoughts, ideas, and questions. I value your input, so please take the opportunity to leave a message. Thank you all very much, and have a good evening.